Good morning. It is time to get up and maybe get out with Aaron Rodgers. Did you hear what Brett Favre said about this? You will right now, and then we'll tell you what it really means. Plus, New England may have a need only this man can fill. We'll tell you if Cam to the Pats makes all the sense in the world. And Cowboys ownership speaks to SVP and tells us all exactly why the Dak deal is taking so long. You'll hear it in this hour as we get up with you, starting right now. On a Thursday from Bristol, I'm Mike Greenberg. A happy 30th to you, Scott Van Pelt, and everybody else. Thanks for getting up with us here. We have a very busy day, so let's dive right into it. It starts with Get Up and Go. And according to a memo obtained by our Seth Wickersham, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell voluntarily reduced his salary to $0 weeks ago in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Meanwhile, baseball, where the Hall of Fame has canceled the July 26th induction ceremony because of the pandemic, Derek Jeter, Larry Walker, and the rest of this year's class will now go in with the 2021 inductees next summer. To hockey, the NHL is hoping that players can begin returning to some local team training facilities in late May as part of a Phase 2 transition period. No firm decisions or set timelines have been made. And back to the NFL, where the Bucs have exercised the fifth-year option on tight end O.J. Howard. Some had expected Tampa to move on from Howard after trading for Gronkowski, but Tom Brady will now likely have both those weapons to play with. And that brings us to our top story this morning. The Packers trading up for quarterback Jordan Love, continuing to make waves now a full week after the first round of the draft. Yesterday, Brett Favre was a guest on the Rich Eisen Show, said he expects Aaron Rodgers to finish his career on another team.
And I think Aaron will finish somewhere else. That's my gut. I guarantee you this, and I don't know this for certain, but I guarantee you it's got the wheels turning in Aaron's mind, which if that's the case, then that means that there's a chip on his shoulder towards the organization that otherwise was not there. And so all he needs is a reason other than this reason to expedite that.
And there we go. And if anyone would know, Brett would know. I don't need to remind you of the history there. I do need to introduce you to my guys. Lewis Riddick and Ryan Clark are with me this morning, and they are ready to go. And Lewis, I'm going to start with you. You, of course, did the draft, and then you are a person who knows all about team building. So they had to know, right, when they made this pick, that it was going to create this sort of reaction. But how are you now trying to deal with it when you have a quarterback whose contract is unmovable for the next 2 years at minimum? Aaron Rodgers is locked to Green Bay. So how do you handle this?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, you know, they should have been upfront and honest with Aaron Rodgers about the fact that if Jordan Love was there, that they were going to make an aggressive move to go ahead and acquire him. This is not the kind of thing you want to, you know, just kind of throw on the front doorstep of your franchise quarterback, your Hall of Fame quarterback, so to speak, without him having any forewarning or any kind of advance notice. That being said, considering the fact that they did move up for him, that being Jordan Love, and that the head coach and the general manager were in lockstep with this, they obviously calculated that, look, 2 years from now, when you move up and you draft a quarterback, they don't sit for 3 years like Aaron Rodgers did anymore. That's just not the way things go anymore. So they had to have looked out into the future and said, okay, look, 2 years from now, we can get out from underneath Aaron's contract with about a $17.9, $18 million cap hit. And considering the fact that this quarterback will carry a minimal cap hit, we will be able to stomach that dead money on our, you know, on our salary cap. And we will go ahead and move forward from there. And we're just going to have to manage the relationship between now and then. Otherwise, you don't make this move. And in particular, look, you can compare this if you want to when Aaron was drafted, when Brett was there. But remember, Aaron Rodgers fell to the Green Bay Packers, and the Green Bay Packers just honored their board and picked him and took the value pick. This was a calculated move. So obviously they have some plans going on, you know, in their mind in the future, and they better manage this relationship over the next 2 years, because this is a football team that's on the cusp of winning. But if your quarterback is not dialed in and your quarterback is not all in, this could potentially be something that really rocks the foundation of this organization.
RC, how do you feel if you're a player on a team that was 13-3 a year ago, one game away from the Super Bowl, and every action from your front office appears to be building for something that is still 3 years away?
I think you start to worry a little bit. And if you're one of the veterans in that locker room, or if you're one of those defensive players that really helped you get to the point that you got to last year, you're starting to be a little bit concerned that this team is more concerned with making sure they don't have lulls in the future rather than competing right now and trying to win a Super Bowl, trying to be a championship level organization. And that's difficult to deal with, especially when you have someone like Aaron Rodgers. When you're a player on this team, you understand how great your quarterback is, and if he has the requisite pieces, how amazingly he can play to get you to that pinnacle. And right now, you're feeling like the team is not tied into that as well. So when your GM and your head coach on a different page from your best football player, then that creates a division within the locker room, a division within the team that's hard to overcome. And we've seen the different things with Aaron Rodgers and relationship to coaches, even when they had Mike McCarthy. So you bring in a new coach, he wants to go in a different direction, get the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands. This doesn't end well to me, and Aaron Rodgers will play in a different uniform before he retires.
Right. It doesn't end well, and it also doesn't end soon. So, Lewis, I'll ask you if you agree. We just heard RC say it. We heard Brett Favre say it. Do you believe Aaron Rodgers winds up playing somewhere else?
Well, no doubt. No doubt. I think the 2022 season is when you will see him play elsewhere, because that's what makes the most sense for them from a cap perspective. Now, could he play somewhere else in as soon as 2021? Sure he could. I mean, he has a roster bonus that comes due, I believe, the third day of the new league year in 2021. He would carry about a $30 million plus dead money cap hit to the football team. But again, when you combine that with the cap hit that Jordan Love will carry, it's something, again, you could stomach. It wouldn't be ideal, but if this relationship really starts to deteriorate here in the 2020 season and they go, hey, look, Jordan's ready to go, a la Patrick Mahomes when he really sat for 1 year behind Alex Smith. Jordan's ready to go here in 2021. Aaron doesn't want to be here. As RC just pointed out, this is really having a negative effect on the locker room. We need to move forward from here. Well, then maybe see them make that. You could possibly see them make that kind of aggressive move. It's not out of the question, but it wouldn't be ideal for them. This is just a situation overall, though, that there's no doubt that they thought about this beforehand. They knew what the ramifications were going to be, and quite honestly, they didn't care. They're looking forward to not only the short term where they feel they can compete, but the long term as well. And they don't really care how this affects Aaron, just honestly.
Incredible to me. This is a team that was 13-3 that we are talking about. Guys, stay with me. We have tons and tons more on this as our morning continues. But another huge story yesterday that broke as we were on the air was the NCAA announcing that it will support a proposal to allow student athletes to make money from their names, images, and likenesses, though changes won't likely take effect before 2021. Here's the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, on where it goes from here.
Indeed, our efforts over the years to improve college athletes' experiences have often been met with increased litigation and challenges that significantly limit the NCAA's ability to address those needs and opportunities. And for that reason, we're going to continue to engage with Congress to help navigate these challenges. Indeed, it's clear we need Congress's help in all of this.
Those comments from Mark Emmert drew a lot of attention yesterday. We say good morning to our friend Jay Billis. Jay, what was your reaction to that?
Well, first, it was another step forward to athletes getting the same economic rights as literally everyone else. But it's also sort of more of the same, where the NCAA has proven that all of these rules that they've had are not based on any principle at all. That they've said for years that if you got name, image, and likeness rights, that you're a professional and that you're akin to an employee of the university, all that stuff. And now they're saying, okay, we've been trying to do this all along, but yet we've been met with litigation at every turn trying to help the student athlete. The NCAA got dragged to this point by losing federal lawsuits and also by all these state legislatures that are passing laws to give these athletes the rights that literally everyone else has. And so it's a little bit disingenuous to pretend like they've been pushing this rock uphill and the public's been pushing against them. That's just not true.
Yeah, and so where does it go from here as far as that's concerned? He's talking about getting congressional intervention support. Where do you see that going?
Well, as you mentioned, these are just recommendations, so not until January of 2021 will we see any movement on this with regard to rules. So I believe what the NCAA is going to do, they're going to pull back on this. It will not be in this form. All these guardrails are really just restrictions. So they want to put more restrictions on the athletes, so they can allow them to make money from the institution or use university marks, stuff like that. But they're going to still go to Congress and try to get an antitrust exemption. I do not discount the possibility that the NCAA is going to take these different states to court to try to stop these different state laws on some sort of constitutional theory that it violates the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion, that they're just going to capitulate here. And think about this, Greeny. I mean, in October of 2019, Mark Emmert said that the California Fair Pay to Play Act was an existential threat to the NCAA. And he said that this is going to make players professionals. He said in a lawsuit that if you endorse products, you're just a shill for the products. And now they've turned around and said this and endorsed this. And it makes you wonder, like, why have you tried to die on this hill for all these years? Why have you wasted all this time and money? There's no principle involved here. None. And on that regard, I think it's really sort of sad for the NCAA that they've fought this for so long.
One other thing I want to ask you about that is at least tangentially connected to this. And that is, for the last few years, we've seen a lot of very high profile high school basketball players choose to go overseas rather than play in college. And now we have an increased number going to the G League, where they've created a new pathway program, including the number one player in high school basketball this year. What impact does that have on college basketball going forward?
It will diminish college basketball. I'm not like those who say there's doomsday around the corner. It's going to kill college basketball and ruin it. It won't. College basketball will be fine. I don't think college basketball wants to be just fine and wants to survive. Like some say, well, we survived without LeBron James and survived without Kobe Bryant. Yeah, we survived and we're doing just fine. But it would be better if you had them in school and playing in college. But I think the biggest question, Greeny, is for colleges, the NCAA, to say, hey, we're educators. We should be encouraging young players to come to college. Because if we're encouraging this, they're calling it a pathway, if we're encouraging people not to go to college, what's the message you're sending to young high school players? You're basically telling young high school players, you don't even need to worry about your high school work because you don't want to be eligible to come to college anyway. So who cares? I mean, I think that's a really bad message for educators to send to young people. We should be encouraging young people to come to college and incentivizing it. Now, this move with name, image, and likeness is a step forward in that regard, too, that we're not putting up more barriers. But I think it's offensive for higher education to say, if you don't want to be Shane Battier or Bill Bradley, we off with you. We don't want you at all. I think that's a really bad message.
It's remarkable the way this stuff is changing. It feels like right before our eyes right now. Jay, great to see you. Thank you. We'll check back in because this thing's not going away. Meanwhile, we're just getting started here on Get Up. Coming up, the Patriots may need quarterback help, but they seem totally uninterested in Cam Newton. Why? You'll find out in just a moment. And then, they are the throwdowns that make you jump out of your seat and wince at the same time. We've got our look at the most disrespectful dunks ever as we continue Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Steel. Are you ready for a steal? And by USAA, proud supporter of the military community. What you're made of, we're made for. We continue with more from the National Football League, where Cam Newton stands alone as the number one remaining free agent quarterback after the Panthers released him on March 24th and then signed Teddy Bridgewater a day later to become the team's new starting quarterback. We talked at length about Cam yesterday, and all fingers on our show, at least, seem to point towards Foxborough. So we decided to go there live this morning. This is Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for us. And there have been no indications whatsoever, Mike, that the Patriots are interested in Cam. So I guess I would ask you, why not?
Well, Greeny, the short answer is that they are intrigued enough with what they've seen from Jarrett Stidham that they want to keep investing in him. On Saturday night after the draft, Bill Belichick said that Stidham improved a lot behind the scenes last year, and that they will see where that takes him. And in the context of this conversation, what does Stidham have going for him compared to Cam Newton? Youth, health, he's a known system fit, he's a known culture fit. And when you talk about what the Patriots generally value in quarterback play, they boil it down to two things: accuracy and decision-making. And Stidham has really rated favorably from a statistical standpoint over his career. So really what they're doing, Greeny, is they're trying to put the pieces around Jarrett Stidham to put him in the best position to succeed. That includes veteran quarterback Brian Hoyer alongside him, a player that Belichick says we know what he brings us, a steady level of play. So if things go off track with Stidham, they feel comfortable with Hoyer alongside him.
You know, as you say it, it makes all the sense in the world to me. I was leading the brigade on the they should sign Cam thing, and now you've completely dissuaded me of any such thought. Mike Reese, that's well done. Thank you very much, my man. We'll see you soon. Let me bring my guys back in here, Lewis Riddick and Ryan Clark. And RC, I'll start with you. As I listened to that, it made a lot of sense to me. Now, I have been leading the charge of I'd be fascinated to see Cam Newton with the coaching of Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels and what creative stuff they may put around him. What do you think of the idea of Cam in New England?
I think it's a great idea. I think we're looking at a team with Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator who could change week to week based on the best way to attack their opponent. So I'm definitely certain that they can get a guy like Cam Newton acclimated to their offense and adjust things to make them work for him. I also believe he would be a good fit because they don't have the wide receivers on the outside that usually create their own separation. So now you have a guy that can get you into second play opportunities. But also what usually happens during this time is teams are in OTAs, teams are in phase 3, phase 2 of whatever the offseason program is, and you start to see what you have in the quarterback room or what you have in any positional room. And right now you're not getting to see that from Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. Maybe once these guys can get back to the facility, they may look at Jarrett Stidham and say, you know what, he isn't the guy that we thought, and if Cam is still around, then maybe check it out, get him in your building and see if he's a fit. I think the one thing I do remember about Jarrett Stidham is he came into a game early on in the season against the New York Jets. He threw a pick six to Jamal Adams and he got pulled. Now, I know there are more things that go into evaluating a quarterback and you get to see him at practice. You've done your scouting, but that doesn't look like a guy who can lead the New England Patriots to the level of play that they want this season. So I'll be interested to see how things go from here.
Lewis, you played for Bill. You know him well. How do you see this thing playing out for the Patriots, and what do you think happens for Cam?
Yeah, I think for the Patriots, it's just as Mike Reese alluded to, they really like the fit that Jared provides them at the quarterback position, him along with Brian Hoyer. I know that Josh is a big fan of his. I know that they like how he developed last year, and I know that one snapshot against the New York Jets is not a favorable one, and that's the one that sticks in people's minds. But he had a very, very good preseason. They really did like how he learned this offense under Tom Brady. They like how he executed this offense in the preseason. They like his decision-making. They like his accuracy. As something that Mike Reese has already said, that those are the number one and number two things that they look for in quarterbacks. And they feel as though with this offseason, with the online training that they are doing up there as far as their offseason is concerned, that Jared is going to make tremendous jumps and they're going to be able to hit the ground running here in the fall. And look, the way they are building this football team, I mean, they're building it inside out. You see they drafted two tight ends this year. It's going to be very much so similar to what they have done in the past. So as far as Cam Newton is concerned, You know, it's interesting. What are the two best two teams that really stick out to me as far as being good fits for him? Obviously, Jacksonville would be a good one for me because I just can't imagine that Gardner Minshew is going to go into the 2020 season uncontested with Josh Dobbs. Although I like Josh Dobbs, the former cornerback at Tennessee for the Tennessee Volunteers. I like him. I don't see them just going. It's hard for me to believe that they're going to go that route, although it looks like that's what they're going to do. The other team that intrigues me for Cam Newton is this. And maybe it doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint, but the LA Rams would be the perfect place for Cam Newton, considering what they like to do as far as running the offense, do the run game, run play action pass, changing the launch points on boots and design rollouts. I'll tell you what, Sean McVay would have a field day with Cam Newton. It's not a team that's really been mentioned, but from a philosophical fit, it would be ideal. And wouldn't you love to see Cam out in LA? I think it'd be perfect, but I don't know if it makes much sense for them financially.
Yeah, they spent all that money on Jared Goff, but we'll see. Cam Newton right now is a man without a team, and it may stay that way for a little while. Guys, you stay with me. We have much more football to do, including we'll go to Dallas. One of the biggest decision makers from the Cowboys says they want Dak long term, and then explains why the deal has been delayed. We'll tell you whether or not it really matters. And we'll do that after Bobby Carpenter joins us and tries to go head-to-head with Hembo here. Sneaky Hembo time. Which NFL team averaged the most yards in losses last season? That's the question. The answer is next. Let's get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back, and our sneaky Hembo question this morning involves teams where when they lost games, you couldn't blame the offense. Bobby Carpenter joins us to try and answer this one. Which NFL team, Bob, averaged the most yards in losses last year?
So that's for the offense then, Greeny, that the offense had the most
Correct.
Yards and losses?
Yes.
I'm going to have to go with the team that had a ton of sacks and probably didn't run the ball that well. I think they led the league in it with Jameis Winston, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That's not a bad guess, but it's not right. This is an unfair question. It's the Ravens, who only lost two games the entire year, and they averaged 424 yards. The Dallas Cowboys ranked second. The Buccaneers are on the list. I feel bad for you, Bob, because Hembo had a very bad week last week, and he's taking it out on everybody right now. Now, speaking of the Cowboys, Dak Prescott and his team still have not come to terms on a long-term extension. Last night, the Cowboys executive VP, CEO, and director of player personnel, Stephen Jones, was on with our buddy SVP. And this is what he said about where things stand right now.
Dak's our guy. I mean, we think no one thinks more of Dak Prescott than Jerry Jones and myself. I know Mike, when he signed on for it, part of why he signed on was Dak Prescott. And, you know, it's just getting it done. I mean, the bigger these deals get, the harder they get. We believe in our track record of getting players signed. I totally believe we'll get Dak signed at the right number. That's good for Dak, good for the Cowboys, good for this team. We're all motivated to win. We will certainly want Dak to be happy, but we also want to surround him with great football players.
All right, let me bring Lewis Riddick back in on this again as one whose job it has been to put together teams and you understand the salary cap ramifications. How do you read the fact that this is taking as long as it's taking?
Well, Greeny, one thing I do know in contract negotiations is that it takes two sides to make a deal. And if one side isn't willing to budge at all in order to make a deal and give up some of the things that they want, whether it be in Dak's case in particular here, okay, let's just assume that the Dallas Cowboys are up in the $33, $34, $35 million a year range. When you talk about length of contract, you know, there has been some rumors about the fact that Dak wants a shorter deal so he can, you know, re-up again and come to the negotiating table again sooner rather than later and take advantage of some of that big TV money that's coming down the pike. If you aren't willing to budge off of that, then you can't get a deal done, no matter what the other side does. So it takes two to tango here. I do believe that the Dallas Cowboys want to get a deal done. It would serve them no interest. It wouldn't be in their best interest at all. It would serve them in no way from a positive perspective for them to continue to drag this out, especially considering the fact that they want Dak in the fold. They want him happy. They want to integrate him with the rest of his teammates and all these new weapons that they're getting. Well, namely a guy like CeeDee Lamb. Because on paper, they're set up. They're set up to make a run. And I know people like RC are tired of hearing people talk about the Dallas Cowboys. I'm tired of kind of talking about them being contenders too. So, but they need to get him in there. They need to get the ball rolling in the best way that they can right now, given the circumstances, and have him in the fold. I don't think they want to continue to sit here and play this kind of hardball game with him. I don't think they're intentionally trying to do that. I think they're going to pay him because they know how important he is to their future. And I believe as much as the next person that Jerry ultimately wants to win, and he will do what is necessary to win in terms of paying his players as he's done in the past. And I have no doubt he'll get this done. But just remember, it takes two to get a deal done.
Yeah, and so we'll see. Again, that's one interesting quarterback situation in the NFC East. Another one got interesting during the draft as well. And that was a really interesting choice by the Eagles in the second round when they took Jalen Hurts, one of the most scrutinized picks of the draft. Yesterday on First Take, Tim Tebow explained how Hurts could be a big asset for Philly just by being on the roster.
One of the biggest things that we have to remember is just by having a Jalen Hurts on your team means the other defense every week has to prepare for hours, not minutes, but hours every week, put in plans just to stop him. That always gives you an advantage in time against the defense. I think that's why it's a huge advantage.
I love that take, and I'm always fascinated when we hear that. And with RC and Bobby with us this morning, we wanted to actually give you a look at what that looks like. So, guys, yesterday, Dan Orlovsky here on Get Up did a really interesting tape on some of the things they may be able to do offensively with Jalen Hurts. Here's how that looked.
Imagine the receiver up at the top of the screen is DeSean Jackson. And then at the bottom of the screen is Dallas Goedert and Ertz and Jalen Reagor, your first round pick. Now, what Oklahoma did was they flash faked through the running back and they ran a version of a PRO where they stress the boundary with Jalen Hurts. And those receivers at the bottom of the screen, they're going to run real pass concept routes. And they taught Jalen Hurts, listen, if those second level defenders, when you're running the football, if they come attack you, throw the ball behind them and it's a huge gash in your pass game. But I've talked about two quarterbacks on the field at the same time. So let's use our imagination here. Let's pretend the tailback is not on this play and Carson Wentz is at your traditional quarterback spot and Jalen Hurts is off to his left. He's going to go across Carson Wentz's face on a run play. And this is the RPO number one where Carson Wentz will catch this snap and flash it to Jalen Hurts. And he's going to read that backside linebacker. If he attacks the run, throw the slant behind to that single receiver, DeSean Jackson. And if he stays back, now hand it off to Jalen Hurts. Now here comes the fun, because Jalen Hurts now has got some lead blockers out in front of him, and he looks like a runner. He's going to stress the horizontal aspect of the field. And you teach him, hey, if those defenders stay back, I want you to go to those blockers out in front. It becomes a run play. But if they come and attack you, RPO option number two, you throw that ball over their heads to our pass game concept. This is just a small version of how I expect the Eagles to use both these guys.
I thought that was so well done yesterday, because now you're really getting a look at what it is these defenses are preparing for. So, Bobby, what did you see there? As a linebacker in the NFL, tell me why that becomes so complicated.
I go back to some of my time when I was with the Dallas Cowboys, and they had, Mike Vick in 2009. Andy Reid brought him in to rehabilitate him. They were using him interchangeably with Michael Vick, so there was some time there where you had to plan for Vic as well as McNabb, and there's a handful of snaps during the season you saw them both together. The thing is, in the NFL, once you get a bead on it and one team figures it out, they copy it each and every week. And so when you're looking at the Big 12 there, where passing or defense is elective, it's not necessarily a core requirement, it's going to be much easier. You have no pressure that was coming and attacking those guys. So here's what I would have done. I'm going to walk the defensive outside linebackers up on the edge of the defense. I'm going to force Jalen Hurts. If you're going to be back there, you're going to have to be a running back. You're going to have to actually block somebody, go out in a route, and you're not going to just be pressured to be able to drift around and make decisions uncontested. And that's the thing they do in the NFL. When you try to run this exotic stuff, we'll play man across the board on the back end, and we're going to force you to make a quick decision in the backfield. Not a situation where you're going to be able to hand off and then the quarterback will drift away, and now you're really playing with 10 guys when the defense has 11, because you have two quarterbacks out there, and one of them's not really going to want to block, and the other one is really not going to want to try to catch the ball either. So you've got to make a decision on what you're doing. Houston's sitting back here just relaxing. They're hanging out. You go pressure these guys, it's a completely different scenario, Greeny.
RC, let's talk about it, because I find it all so fast. This is for the advanced class. I mean, we're getting into advanced X's and O's here, but I love it. What do you see here, RC?
Well, I see a lot of fun. I see a lot of things that you can do at practice that make you feel really good. The one thing I'm going to think of as a defender is if you want to fake this ball to Jalen Hurts inside these tackles, I'm going to make you give him the ball. Because when what made the Wildcat so good and what makes some of these quarterback runs so good is that you add an extra blocker. And like Bobby says, if Carson Wentz is on the field and he's playing the quarterback position and Jalen Hurts is as running back, you now essentially take that blocker out of there. And what helps quarterbacks is being in space one-on-one with a lot of room, able to make one-on-one moves against defenders who are sometimes tackles, linebackers, ends, who may not be as quick. But if you give Jalen Hurts the ball and ask him to pick a hole or read the run as a running back, well, do you think linebackers are going to be scared to step into the hole and hit Jalen Hurts? Do you think Jalen Hurts is going to want to do that play in and play out? No, I don't believe it. And let's think about Tim Tebow. I played Tim Tebow in 2012 when he was with the Jets, and they were supposed to do all these exotic things with him at the quarterback position, and this was kind of the first time the league was seeing the RPO, the league was seeing the spread offenses, the zone reads. Well, you see it every week now. The difference is there's some weeks where you're going to see it and the guy doing it is Cam Newton, the guy doing it is Lamar Jackson. These dudes are special, they're electric. Jalen Hurts is good, but he is not those people. So where I do think it's a good pick and it can help this team, it's not going to be as difficult as everybody says it will be. It is no longer 2010. It's now 2020. We see this every week, and sometimes we see it with better athletes.
I'll say it again. This might as well have been just called the advanced class, because those were advanced X's and O's. But if you're a football fan, I hope you liked it as much as I did. Meanwhile, tomorrow night we have a great movie coming your way. Family Movie Night on ESPN and the ESPN app. The feature presentation is Secretariat. It's the story of the greatest thoroughbred racehorse ever. It starts 8:30 Eastern. It's presented by Target. You'll see it tomorrow night. Coming up, Jameis Winston speaks as a Saint for the first time. You'll hear why he sounds excited and what it means for him long term as we get up with you on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We're back on Get Up, where the NCAA announced yesterday during our show that it supports a proposal to allow student athletes to make money from their name, their image, and their likeness, although those changes won't likely take effect before 2021. We had Jay Billis about a half hour ago live here on Get Up. This was his reaction.
In October of 2019, Mark Emmert said that the California Fair Pay to Play Act was an existential threat to the NCAA. And he said that this is going to make players professionals. He said in a lawsuit that if you endorse products, you're just a shill. And now they've turned around and said this and endorsed this. And it makes you wonder, like, why have you tried to die on this hill for all these years? Why have you wasted all this time and money? There's no principle involved here, none. And on that regard, I think it's really sort of sad for the NCAA that they've fought this for so long.
Now, this will, of course, impact sports across the board, and we've got two of them represented here with guys from huge programs. Ryan Clark played football at LSU, Bobby Carpenter at Ohio State, and Jay Williams, of course, played your basketball at Duke. And so, Jay, I'll just start there. You heard what Jay Billis said, and you heard what Mark Emmert said. What are your thoughts this morning?
Greeny, it's like, hey, I'm really glad that the NCAA finally got to the dance, but it's the last dance. It's the last dance. Like, this dance is about to be over already. And there's so many layers of oversight that I don't know how you actually enforce it, Greeny. Like, one of those layers of oversight, I actually have my legal pad here. NCAA doesn't want endorsements to help recruiting. How do you actually enforce that? How are you going to work with small business owners to enforce and not label them as boosters? And then they say there's no cap on the amount of money that players can actually earn. But it said to ensure that compensation provided, it's relative to activity. I don't know what relative to activity actually means. And so it's like, can activity mean if you're a high school, you're a big time star, like you can cap more? There's so much oversight here that there's no way that they can enforce it. And that's why I said, like, they're late to the game. And I understand that they're trying to be malleable, but now it just feels like they're always going to be playing catch up and the game's going to surpass them. I said this a while ago. I thought this was, you know, back in the day when all this stuff started to happen and we started seeing players go overseas, I was then and there saying that this is going to become the new norm. And I thought this was the end of the NCAA. And I think now we're starting to see that. Will they survive? Of course. But I don't think they're going to get the big caliber name in sports. I think there's going to be alternative options.
All right. So we always associate that with basketball. But this will, at least could, have an enormous impact on football as well. Bobby, what do you think?
You know, and it's interesting, just listening to what Jay said, like, this took a generational global pandemic, I almost feel like, for the NCAA to finally push this over and kind of get on the right side of where everything was going. And, you know, one of the things you heard about in the release is they're talking about how this would be able to provide relief during this difficult time, you know, financially different schools to help some of the student athletes. Well, it doesn't go into effect until 2021. And that's if it gets pushed all the way through. There's a lot of gray area to this. There's going to be multiple levels of compliance. It's going to be pushed back onto the schools. And I'm not really sure how they're going to navigate this whole thing. And so that's really the interesting piece, like, to kind of dovetail off Jay. Like, they're trying to push this through. They're behind it. They're opening it up. But there's really not a lot of answers in it outside of what everybody wants to hear is now people will be able to go out and market themselves and receive what they deem to be fair market value for their likeness.
Maybe they're trying to continue to control something that isn't really controllable. Ryan Clark, you're not only, of course, a former athlete, but you are the father of an NCAA student athlete. So what is your take here?
Well, I think the timing is not mysterious, right? You're hearing all of this news about the NCAA and whether or not sports can survive. Can these universities survive? And so now they come out and they make some more news. You're also hearing about people deciding to not even play college basketball, whether it's the G League or go overseas. And so what the NCAA has shown us that they'll do is they'll maintain control until forced to relinquish it. And that's what's happening now. When you listen to Jay talk about some of the oversight that's going to have to come into play in order for this to be viable, that's because they weren't planning on doing this. This isn't something that the NCAA truly wants to be behind, but they have been forced into. And so for me, I think this is a start, but I don't know if they will ever be at the point or the level that will be needed to compete with some of these other entities because they started so late and they fought it so long. And I agree with Jay Billis. There was no principle behind fighting it other than control, and now they find themselves in a situation that I don't think they ever get out of.
So, Jay, Will, to come back to you,
and Greeny, think about this too, Greeny, for a second. I was going to say, think about this for a second, Greeny, too, and Bobby and Ryan, especially with you guys in football, you guys are going to be the first at this, okay? So you're dealing with this, you're trying to implement this right now with all this new legislation, all this new enforcement strategies that you're trying to put together out of thin air in order to react, right? On top of that, what happens if we actually don't have fans that attend football games this season? Then you don't have football, right? Then what you're going to see is a decrease of D1 sports, Greeny. D1, it affects Title IX because football and basketball subsidize a lot of other sports throughout the school. So this is just a beginning of a slew of issues for the NCAA that, once again, they're reactive. If they have been proactive in planning this stuff, this would have already been in place to help carry that issue that they're going to have in this current season coming up.
Well, Bobby, one of the things that I think has happened here is so much conversation on this show and others about just how important the money that football generates is has made it very difficult to try and argue that this isn't a business. And at some point, I think that even the NCAA cannot continue to carry that out.
No, they just kind of finally pulled their head out of the sand a little bit. And one of the other interesting pieces that came out with this announcement with the NCAA is, you know, the players aren't going to be allowed to have any university marks on them, which is understandable. But I began to think about this. Like, this happens in the NFL all the time. I mean, you have your sponsorships with the NFL, guys or players, and if they marry those two things together, they're allowed to do it. Part of the reason I think the NCAA, Greeny, is like, they don't also want some of the players chewing into the university's profits for some of these different marketing deals that have become so rich to help finance all of these things, because the money from football especially drives all the other sports. And without it, college athletics, as we know, I think will begin to cease to exist.
We're going to talk more about this a little bit later in the program as well. Paul Feinbaum, Laura, and others, Jalen Rose, will join us to do that a little bit later. Guys, thank you very much. I want to get back to the NFL here because the Saints introduced Jameis Winston on a Zoom conference call yesterday, and he was talking about what made the situation in New Orleans appealing to him.
Well, we have a Hall of Fame quarterback and a future Hall of Fame coach. That's very intriguing for a young quarterback like myself. I don't think you really can beat that, especially if you believe in yourself. If you believe in the ability that you have, really, if you have faith that you will become a starting quarterback again, you take this opportunity in a heartbeat to work with these amazing group of men.
Now, he described it as sort of getting a Harvard education in quarterback plan. I think we all agree with that, Lewis Riddick, that this is a really good move for Jameis. But here's the part of it I find interesting. Let's say he's there for the year. Everything goes fine, but he barely plays, if at all. Then next year, how do you assess him? Now you're a person, you're the general manager of a team that needs a quarterback. How will you view Jameis Winston at that point differently, if at all, than you would right now?
Well, I think what you're talking about there is, look, kind of what Jameis Winston was talking about. Just being around Sean Payton and being around Drew Brees will have a positive impact on how people will view him. At least that's the bet that he's making, and that's something that makes sense. So as a decision maker, you would obviously really dial into your relationship with Sean Payton, and you would dial into your relationship, if you have one, with Drew Brees, and really ask, what did Jameis do during this time, during the 2020 season, that you believe would project to him having come out of this on the other side a much better football player? And would it be willing, you know, would it be behoove us and be beneficial to us to go ahead and sign him and take the risk if you were looking at him as being a starting quarterback or someone who's going to compete for a starting job in 2021? Would it be something that makes sense for us? And then let me say this too. You know, when I really start thinking about this and looking at this, look, Taysom Hill signs a 2-year deal, which is essentially a 1-year deal because he got $16.5 million fully guaranteed at signing. So when you're looking at the 2020 season here, and then Jameis signing for $1 million, when this season is over and Drew moves on, and supposedly he's going to move on to the broadcast booth, and Sean sits back and looks at his football team, although he has already said that he believes that Taysom Hill is a starting quarterback, and he is a future starting quarterback for him and for that franchise, he will have the benefit of having a full season to really sit back and organically and objectively evaluate and say, hey, look, I believe Taysom Hill was going to be a starting quarterback. I believe he was the future. But things can change, and we know things can change very quickly when it comes to quarterbacks. So who's to say that this is just a 1-year rental for Jameis Winston? It's not out of the realm of possibility that he winds up being someone who's in the mix in 2021 there in New Orleans, because, you know, he is a quality quarterback. He is only 26 years old, despite the fact that he's played 5 years in the NFL, and he has played at a very high level. So I wouldn't just throw out the door that this is just about him trying to rehab his image for some other football team. Although Sean, again, and let me reiterate, has said to my face that he believes Taysom is a starting quarterback. But I think all things are on the table, and it's only going to benefit him, whether it be for the Saints or for some other football team, Greeny.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have been making that argument for a week, and you're someone people will actually listen to saying it. I agree. I think Jameis is the future at quarterback in New Orleans. Meanwhile, what is the future at quarterback in Green Bay? A former Packers legend weighed in on a current one yesterday, saying things you're not going to want to hear if you're a fan of the Packers. But you will hear them next as we get up with you on ESPN.